This is CliffCentral.com.
He couldn't make it yesterday, but the Burning Platform pre-election edition is this morning, hosted by the man who always brings it to us, Justice Malala, who's got his finger on the pulse, ladies and gentlemen, Friday morning at 7:09.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on CliffCentral.com.
That's right. And Nando's, every week we manage to bring you Justice Malala. He's been very, very busy this week. I'm sure this must be the craziest time for you, right? I mean, it must be insane, because everybody's asking for your opinion on everything, and you have to be watching the news 24/7.
It's the thug life, man.
Yeah, thug life. Right. Exactly. How are you, Justice?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Yeah, good. What's happening?
It's just too much, man. It's too much. I can't keep up anymore. You know, whether it's like, you know, people calling each other names, fighting over Nelson Mandela. Is it like, we need a referendum or whatever they call it, you know, so that we can all sit down and say, can we just decide who Nelson Mandela belongs to? And we need to do it like between elections, like 2018 December.
Is it
June.
Even important enough to decide this stuff?
Well, you know, there's President Zuma yesterday. I saw he was in Pretoria saying, oh, you know, they're stealing Nelson Mandela. They want to make him look separate from the rest of ANC members. Then there's old Musimaman in Nelson Mandela Bay saying, oh, you know, we are the children of Nelson Mandela, all this. And it's like, guys, you know, tell me what you're going to do for me. I'm tired of hearing about what Nelson Mandela
And we actually don't care what you represent anymore. We want to see service delivery.
Exactly. And these elections should be about service delivery, not about, oh, you know, Nelson Mandela said this.
I mean, he's gone. He for the last 10 years of his life, I don't think he was even,
you know,
interested.
Poor guy.
All right, so let's start with the ANC and their factions, because those divisions were laid bare on this issue with Marius Fransman.
Yeah. So what happened was that at some point, he said, I'm going to step down until the process finishes. You remember there were allegations that he assaulted a young woman who thought she was traveling with him because she was working for him.
Right.
So the ANC said, we'll do an investigation. You know, the ANC started something very, very nice called the Integrity Commission. And it's got the veterans, the high and mighty people like Frene Ginwala, Ahmed Kathrada, Andrew Mlangeni, people like that. You know, it's like, no, these are the elders. They will set us to rights. So investigation, they embark on it. Issue a report. They don't issue it. They give it to the Secretary General.
Uh-huh.
But he apparently doesn't know. Anyway, that's the detail behind it. But last week, President Zuma and Nomvula Mokonyane, the ANC's head of campaigns, are going to the Western Cape, and they say, this guy must come along with us. They say he's been, Nomvula Mokonyane says, no, it's all good with his case. He's back at work, and he stands up and thanks everyone. I'd like to thank my family. I'd like to thank so-and-so.
It's all over.
It's over. We've done with this thing. Gwede Mantashe pipes up and says, No.
There's no one who can do it like him, right?
I mean, let's get...
No.
And says, no, take your legs from under that desk and go back home. Because no. It's not, you're not. So you have this amazing, incredible spectacle. First of all, think about this. The ANC in the Western Cape has become... it's become a nothing. It's a nothing game. The ANC in the Western Cape doesn't really exist anymore. You know, it's there, but it's not there.
Yeah.
Marius Fransman, he's the head of the ANC in the Western Cape. It's not an important place. So the ANC is losing in the Western Cape. It's trying to get just that little bit of support it can still get.
What would it matter if they did have an alleged sex offender? Almost, you know.
There is that. But anyway, so you have, on the one side, you have Gwede Mantashe, Zweli Mkhize saying, guys, this guy hasn't been cleared. He mustn't be in office and so forth. But they don't want to show him the report anyway. I mean, I think procedurally he's absolutely right to say, well, you're damning me without showing me what I'm accused of.
Right.
But what it said to me was the ANC is so odd, so divided, that you have on the one side two of the top leaders of the ANC saying, no, come along, we're going to be dancing on a stage with you, and we love you, you're cleared.
Dabbing on the stage, by the way, Justice.
Dabbing.
Yeah, that's a big thing, this dabbing. Yeah,
it's taken over.
It's actually an election strategy, dabbing. Who would have known?
Can someone show? I just see pictures.
Flex will show you.
It's Flex, you know how to do dabbing?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. See.
Flex, there's a place for you in the movement.
Explain how you do it.
You basically, you put one hand in the air, and then you put your head into your elbow, the like inner side of your elbow, and you say, dab.
He looks like he's smelling his armpit.
Yeah.
Is that what it's meant to be, like smelling your armpit? Peshitta, you agree?
No.
You've got to ask our millennials.
Swag to it.
Okay, you show us how you do it.
It's like, boom.
She's smelling her outfit. I've seen pictures. It's like, you know when you leave home and you realize that, oh, damn, I forgot to put on my deodorant.
You just have a quick
snip. Yeah, just have... Anyway, back to the politics.
Yeah.
So anyway, for me, the ANC looks like it's got a bit of a problem, because you've got Gwadamantashe, people like Zwelin Mkhize, others on the one side. You've got Jacob Zuma, Nomvula Mokonyane on the other. You had public statements made by Zizi Kodwa saying, you know, he is no way is he back. And now he looks like he's back. And the ANC is going into an election in a week. What's going on here? So I think the ANC... post this election on August 4 and August 10 is going to have some serious issues to still deal with. And,
yes.
You know, this just sets it up nicely for the next election that we're going to have. And it's probably a more important election than we all realize. And that's in December 2017. And I think this is part of it.
Now, I was on social media this week and I saw Faith Mutambi has been talking again.
She's around. It's great.
What is she for?
I asked myself that question exactly, because
she's great.
She wouldn't speak to journalists. She wouldn't answer any questions about what's happening at the SABC. And this is her patch, by the way. She is the communications minister. But I was interested in that she said, what's happening at the SABC? There's no crisis there. Mm. Basically, what's happening is that the private media is angry and cross and all sorts of things, because a revolutionary decision was taken at the SABC not to read out the headlines in newspapers anymore. So because of this revolutionary decision, people in private media have basically been bashing at the SABC, making out there's a crisis and so forth. And, you know, in her view...
None of that is true.
None of that is true. She says, there's no censorship at the SABC. Anyway, I liked the fact that she repeated something that Laudi had also said in the week's part. I don't know what you mean by censorship. You will remember that he said, that's not an African concept. That was censorship? There's nothing like that in Africa. We don't understand censorship. It's quite a thing. So
It's great, though, when you can say whatever you like, isn't it?
You just make it up.
I mean, it's the most amazing thing in the world, and get away with it.
You don't only get away with it, you get promoted for it.
Yeah.
This is the fantastic thing. I wish we had that sort of thing going on around here. Just say whatever you like, you know, and there's no consequence. It's fantastic.
Wow.
It's fantastic.
Well, there's an interesting article about Laudi Motsoeneng. There always is every other week. And about, you know, why Laudi is raised to this unbelievable role, where he clearly is someone without the competence to be able to handle it. And if Faith and Claudia are right, that everything is okay at the SABC, then how come they've had to backtrack on the journalists that they fired because the court has told them to? How come they've been so demonstrably wrong when it comes to how much money the SABC is making, because we know that they're asking for another bailout from the government? Mm. And how come audience numbers are slipping across all channels?
This is the thing, though. You know, you and I ask questions on the basis of the numbers. This is what the balance sheet looks like. This is what your income statement looks like, and so forth and so forth. That it doesn't matter. Someone wrote the other day that, you know, essentially what you have is that the people who can demonstrate that they are shielding number one from any kind of scrutiny, then that's the measure by which they are looked at. So you and I might want some accountability on the finances, on why you give yourself a 200% increase in your salary, whatever. Hey, you know what? That's not the issue. The issue is, are you doing the job of shielding number one from scrutiny? And that's what they are good at.
Okay. So that's all that matters. Why am I getting precious about the rest of it?
You know, I mean,
how stupid of me.
Move on. Move on now.
What an idiot. I feel so dumb. All right, what about Julius? He says he needs to increase old age grants to 3,000 rand a month.
You know, I when I saw that, I started going, there we go again. You know, the EFF can't run budgets. What's wrong with these guys and so forth? And actually, this is a local election. So, you know, when you pipe up and you go to my hometown, Hammanskraal, and say, hey, I want to take this to 3,000 rand a month. An old age grant at the moment, I think it's 1,040, about 1,000 rand.
Right.
If you double those payouts, you know, you're essentially saying my costs are doubling on this one line. If you go take it to 3,000, then you've got to tell me where the money is going to come from. So from what we've heard from the finance minister from National Treasury, there's no money. When Jacob Zuma came to power in 2009, Thabo Mbeki had taken our debt to GDP ratio. So when the ANC came to power in 1994, the National Party had essentially just stolen,
everything.
Spent stolen money. There was no money in the bank. Every time $100 came in, half of it was, you know, half of it was spent on debt. Mm. So Nelson Mandela appoints Trevor Manuel. Trevor Manuel fixes the budget, and we go down. We become one of those countries in the world where the IMF and the World Bank stand up and say, the South Africans are amazing. They've managed to pay off their debt. So it's like you owning a car. You have a massive debt, and then you pay it off very quickly, and boom, you're a nice guy.
You own your car.
And you own your
car. Not the bank.
Not the bank. You own your house, not the bank. So this is the thing. So from 1997 to 2009, we worked very hard. We didn't own it, but our debt was at about 27%. And it was this is one of the great countries of the world. Geleka Gisa comes in 2009, and we've gone back to where we were. We are in debt, okay?
We're spending way more than we have.
Hasn't the argument by the opposition, so the DA and the EFF and them, hasn't the argument always been there is money in government? It's just that with this current government, all that money gets pocketed.
Well, there you go. So this is where I started thinking, well, Julius, what are you going to do? Where are you going to find the money? So perhaps we could have a little fun here, because you look at Claudio Motsoeneng and his fantastic salary. If Julius comes in and says, you know what, I'm going to cut some salaries around here,
then we'd be talking.
Then we'd be talking, because you'd release some cash, and there Julius would have a point, because you could take some of that money and give it to old age pensioners. I think he's onto something here. But I didn't see him talk about, you know, people in business like to talk about revenue.
Right.
That's the money coming in.
Right.
So politicians like talking about the expenditure side. No one ever says, where's this cash coming from? So
don't add to the problem. Add to the solution.
Add to the solution. So I thought, Julius, it's okay. You know, I'm not going to bash you for, you know, saying for increasing expenditure. But I'd like you to talk to me about revenue, and I can just see it. All those EFF MPs taking a salary cut.
It's not going to happen.
All those ANC MPs taking a salary cut. Bam.
All
those municipal managers and councillors. Bam. We've got so many public officials.
Isn't it true that the municipal manager of Tshwane earns more than the president?
How does that work?
I think he earns more than everyone else in our whole bureaucracy in South Africa. Mm. I think his name is Jason Ngobeni. He earns a pretty good salary. I think he's at about 3.4.
The president's at about 2.7, so he's got more than the pres.
Yeah. And so, you know, imagine Julius Malema walks in, and actually that might be worth talking about. If the DA is doing well in Tshwane, if the EFF is doing as well as it says it is, and some of their people tell me, oh, we're going to get 18% or so. So if you think about that dynamic and you say, okay, so 18%, then let's say the DA gets 35%, you've got a 53% coalition.
Yes.
And
that would be so nice if they just went in there and just started cutting people's salaries. That wouldn't would be so much fun.
Wouldn't
to
we
watch.
Love paying our taxes? Wouldn't we actually feel like this time the bills will be paid? This time everybody else will take this money and do the right thing. And we might actually get some services. Maybe poor people will get houses. And maybe there'll be more than two exits and entrances to Mamelodi.
Mm.
Wouldn't that be nice?
In a perfect world, yeah.
Wouldn't we, for once, see less smoke in the winter because people didn't have to make a fire inside of their house and they could actually have electricity?
And running water.
Oh,
and toilets.
Nice.
Stop. Yeah, we're getting carried away. This is too good to be true.
But all I'm saying is, if Julius wants to pay old age pensioners 3,000 rand a month, go ahead, but take an axe to that salary of the municipal manager in Tshwane and others. I mean, there are so many. Because that, for me, is the thing. I'm not against the paying of the old age pensioners.
Absolutely.
I'm saying, where's the money going to come from?
And let's not forget that people who go into public service always tell us about how it's a noble cause and they're doing it because they care and all that. So show it by taking a cut in your salaries. Yeah. Plus, the more we can cut down on government salaries across the board in every department, the better for all of us.
Oh, man.
All right, let's
look at... Particularly the politicians' salaries are like that. Mm-hmm. Because that's public service, right? The other guys, well, you know...
They're probably just doing a job.
Yeah.
So the EFF, you speak of coalitions. The EFF say they will never have a coalition with the ANC.
Mm, they've been very, very clear about this. It's an interesting thing, that. But when you got so excited about that, say, 18% EFF, 35% DA in Tshwane. This is a hypothetical scenario, by the way.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be interesting then if those two got into bed together? Because you listen to the noise of our election now, and it's the DA is the party of apartheid and all this and so forth and so forth. We all conveniently forget, by the way, that the National Party leadership joined the ANC en masse in 2004, and Martinus van Schalkwyk was minister in Thabo Mbeki's administration.
Now, Mabali did not remember Kurt Brook van Schalkwyk.
But the young of today.
Ben didn't remember Kurt Brook.
No,
did you?
He did.
Oh, okay. Remember Kurt Brook?
Yes.
What happened to him? He was Minister of Tourism for a while.
He was Minister of Tourism for a long time because they couldn't find anything elsewhere.
And that was pretty much his payback for selling the old National Party into the ANC.
Yeah. So you remember, but I mean, there's truth on both sides, because first the National Party jumped into bed with the DP.
The DP then, yeah.
At the time, and Tony Leon started chowing up the National Party. But so for some people, it was like, no. You're taking us over now. So Then they walked away from the DP and became the NNP.
That's right.
The new National Party.
So, and they said, we're going to, they did do something nice. They elected a young person as a leader of the party. Gerrit Brück was young, man. I mean, you looked at him, that's why they called him that. They're like,
Gerrit Brück.
This guy is still in, like, you know, the very short school pants.
Right.
That's where it comes from. Anyway, so, you know, he promptly said, you know what? What are we doing here? We're joining the ANC. We're a conservative party. Where else do you go? So, 2004 election, just before voting. Boom, the National Party joins the ANC. Thabo Mbeki promptly appoints him to his cabinet. And he was there for a solid 10 years,
yeah.
Until 2014, in fact. So it's quite a thing that. Anyway, why are we talking about this?
Now, there were hand grenades, machine guns, pistols, and rounds of ammunition stolen from 6 storerooms at the Simonstown Naval Base.
By Gerrit Brück, no.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but this is something that I didn't even know about this until you pointed it out to me. So, Justice, this is a military base.
Yeah.
This should be among the most secure places in the country.
Yeah. You know, I thought what they do when you join the army is that they, or the Navy, is that, you know, all you young people are punished by being put up to hold guns and stand there and look like you know what you're doing when you don't. So, I would expect there'd be lots and lots of security at this place.
Right. It's a naval base. It's full of ammunition, important things we need. So, what happened?
What happened is, like, last weekend, 6 storerooms were ransacked. People stole hand grenades, as you pointed out, machine guns, pistols, hundreds of rounds of ammunition. My question is, we never talk about this, but, you know, there are all these army bases all over South Africa.
Yes.
So I read one story written by a guy called Graham Hoskin at the Times, and it just details what's been happening. So you're from the Free State, Mabale. Is it the Tempe
Military Base?
So, you know, I didn't know. There'd been a similar thing there where the guards... You know, these guys who have, like, you know, it's like, it's a built-up thing with a guardhouse at the top.
Like a turret.
Like a turret. There, that's the name for it. So, you know, the guy goes up to go on duty and he's looking around. And what he does is go up there and promptly, you know, makes his bed and falls asleep. This is what happened. So there have been all these burglaries at these military bases at the Simonstown one. It now emerges, and the police say they don't know this, that there's been 2 other burglaries there over the past 4 months. So who is stealing all these guns?
Yes.
And I mean,
what are they doing with them?
Exactly. I mean, this is a free democratic country. It's happened at Tempe. It's happened at other bases. It's happening in Simonstown. Someone has a heck of a lot of ammo out there, and we don't know what they're going to use it for. It's like, why isn't someone jumping? Where's the Minister of Defense? Or is she too busy, you know, picking up people in Burundi or wherever?
Well, I think she's too busy with trying to make sure that the president gets a new jet.
Because clearly this isn't a priority. So I'm just asking, someone has a lot of hardware out there and we don't talk about it. What are they using it for?
And maybe there's something nefarious or sinister going on here, because if all of these places... First of all, how hard is it to rob a military base? It should be like robbing a bank. It should be very difficult.
Apparently it wasn't very hard at all.
Well, this is what's scary. So what would you do with all this ammo, and what would your plot be? What would your plan be? Normally, any government in the world who hears about their own military bases being raided would immediately find out that would be priority number one.
Exactly.
Because it's a threat to the state.
Know, I mean, it's quite something. But one of the things that's pointed out in some of these stories is that there's grenade launchers stolen. So. You know, a guy can stand somewhere and say, I'm going to hit that target over there, kilometers away, and boom, bum. I mean, Ben, you need to confess now.
That's time. We're on to you.
We've guys, always suspected you to be the dodgy one, Ben.
We wondered
I've
what you
so
were doing.
Discreet up until now.
All right. Why does government keep losing court cases?
For me, this is the thing. You when we started.
Why
off,
do we have to keep paying for them?
Exactly. There was for me, this was an interesting thing that the judge said in the. In the SABC, the four employees who first went to the labor court, they said, you know what? You guys who actually suspended these journalists, I want you to tell me why you shouldn't pay for all the legal costs.
Ha!
I like that. I like that so much because think about the number of times Claudio Motsoeneng on his own has just come up with something daft and got his lawyers at the SABC to go to court to just prolong the thing and then lose. Okay, who pays for this stuff?
I saw Tuli Madonsela on Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to her, what do you think of this case? And she said to me, because it was on the Tuesday that it was just, she said, the best news is this very thing you bring up. She said, these people who institute all of these, what they call vexatious battles in court.
Vexatious, that's what the lawyers call it, yes.
And she's a lawyer. She's an advocate. So Tuli knows the word.
Vexatious means what?
Means that you're wasting people's time. You're taking up government resources and space to have a dog chase its tail. Basically.
Okay. It's a very popular word in the African American community in the US where you vex me. It's basically you
frustrate.
You're frustrated. You're making my emotions.
You're working me up for no
good
reason.
You're working me up.
So Tuli says these people who implement these vexatious bits of legislation. She said, or these vexatious cases, they start these civil claims or these criminal claims. These people, it has to be civil claims because criminal claims would be the state. But these people who institute these actions, she said they wouldn't spend money on a stokvel.
Exactly.
In their own community, but they're willing to spend government money chasing after this stuff.
Millions. Think about the vexatious matter of Nkandla. You know, one of the stories when President Zuma finally in February said, I'm so sorry, I know I have to pay. Who did he get in? He got Jeremy Gauntlet SC to come in. You know what the Sunday Times reported is his daily fee. It's 50K at least.
A day. That
a
doesn't
day.
Include consultation
or
preparation or any of that. No. So we're looking at probably 100 grand a day when you do all the accounting. Because he would have had a junior. He would have had some lawyers.
He's got a whole
conservatively 100 grand a day. And how many days is this thing in motion?
Oh, there was it's that and that, and then I've got to go read up. I've got to go. It adds up. Then there's Camp J Camp. Then there's others. Then there's others. Yeah. And now think about the number of cases that President Jacob Zuma has been involved in just to keep to keep himself happy. So there's the 783 counts of fraud, corruption, and racketeering. There's Nkandla. There is this. There is that. There is this. Essentially, you're pouring millions a month into lawyers' fees. So I loved that thing when the judge said, tell me why you shouldn't pay for this. And I think, you know what? Every matter that is vexatious like this one, and I'd like this word to come up in the case of the National Prosecuting Authority, which is now going to the Constitutional Court to say, no, we don't want to
And
prosecute.
It's called the National Prosecuting Authority, not the National Defense Authority.
Exactly, but they've become a defense body.
For the president.
Yeah. So I like that. So, yesterday, activists for a long time had said, you have this piece of legislation, is the Restitution of Land Rights Amendment Act, and the Land Rights Amendment Act is a fantastic piece of work, and it's got a long
history. And this is an issue in this country. Yeah. We know how people feel about land. It's a very emotive thing. You'd think that there would be an interest from the government to get it right.
But basically, what seems to be intimated by this case is that the politicians were trying to get the chiefs to be the ones who claim the land. So when it came to consultation of ordinary communities all over Mpumalanga, the NCOP just pitched up and said, oh, we're consulting with you about land. Oops, we're done. Bye. And they didn't do it.
So
communities and NGOs take them to court, and the Constitutional Court says, you guys didn't do your work. Now, here's the thing. I want to tell you what, I mean, this is a scandal of massive proportions. On today's Friday, on Wednesday, the Minister of Land Reform, Gugulon Quinti, issues a press statement saying, oh, we're doing so well. We are amazing. We have issued so many people with land that they had claimed and so forth and so forth. And then he says, so this new legislation that's been kicked out is the second land restitution act that we've had. The first one opened the window in the 90s where Mabale could say, Justice Malala is living on a land, piece of land that was taken from my family by apartheid.
She's tried that with me about 8 times.
Well, I must exhaust all the possibilities,
of
Gareth.
Of course.
Also like vexatious litigation.
Well, you know, at times I enjoy it. Keeps me young.
Sure.
So then if you missed the window, so Mabale didn't get it together, da, da, da. Government says we've got to open up for those people who didn't get to apply in that window, which is fantastic. Although government still had a backlog from then.
Right.
So finally people say, yeah, this is great, and this piece of legislation comes through. So since November 2014, when it was adopted by Parliament and became law, 162,000 claims have been put in for land. Okay. So for 2 years, ordinary people, your Mobale has been thinking, finally I've put in my claim, maybe I'll get my piece of land back and so forth and so forth. Because government didn't do its job, all those 162,000 claims are now in file X, and the process has to start again.
And these are not people who can afford to employ lawyers again.
No. They don't have the ability to be vexatious like some people we know. So this is, for me, is the thing, is that you don't get things right, and this is where we end up. It's a big problem for me. It's a big problem. So, you know, it's people's lives. Those 162 claims, how long are they going to take? So we'll be sitting with a land issue in 2030, in 2040, because people don't do their jobs properly. And I think this is one case where perhaps the judges need to say, who got this through like this, and maybe they should pay for all the costs of the NGOs taking this thing to court. And that's government that needs to be investigated for this.
All right, the last thing, and I'm not sure what you mean here, election voter turnout, and you're asking about men and women?
Oh, no, I'd like to talk about men and women, actually.
Okay.
Can we talk about that? Guys, you know, we talk about the election and talk about the election. We don't talk about what's going on. Have you, I know I'm a very boring guy, but...
Not at all.
No, I am. I admit to it.
Yesterday you weren't here and we missed you.
But one of the things that I noticed when I look at who's voting, if you go on the IEC website.
Yes.
There's a fancy little graphic they've done, and it says registered voters, and it shows you, it breaks it down for you how many. So there's 26.3 million of us registered to vote, and it says how many are 18 to 20, and there's a number there. How many of those are men and how many are women? And then it says 20 to 29, and it says how many are men and women.
Okay.
So I look at this number and I suddenly realize there's something absolutely incredible here.
Uh-huh.
There are 14,000 something, 14 million something women registered to vote.
Yes.
And 11.8 million men.
That's right.
Men.
I'm looking at it now.
There are 2.6 million more women registered to vote
than
men. So if I was the EFF myself, personally,
give them ideas, Justice.
I would say, Julius Malema, step aside.
Get a woman in charge.
Oh,
to get the women.
To appeal to, well, he
he's
is
the people's bay,
the people's bay.
There you go. I mean, this election is for the EFF to lose, man. They could just unleash their weapon. It's over.
So I'm looking at it now. The split, the place where there are, where it's sort of woman heavy is across the board.
It's across the board. And I think we need to have a conversation about men in South Africa. Where are they? The migrant labor system, in one sense, in the past, I would have said, well, if you registered to vote in Kunu, in the Eastern Cape, but you work on a mine in Northam, in Rustenburg,
right,
you probably would not vote in this election because of all sorts of things, or you'd have to find some way of doing it in a special vote.
Mm-hmm.
But that system is being broken up because urbanization has led to all of us living, hopefully more people living as families instead of broken up families. So I just thought, where are the men? Why do you have such a massive disparity between men and women? In the register, are men irresponsible generally? I'd like to get deeper into this. What is the psyche of this split? It's just extraordinary. 2.6 million more women have registered. Are men irresponsible, Ben? We need to talk.
It is. It's being irresponsible.
Look at men in this country. We've got a horrible track record. First of all, we behave far more badly than the women.
Well, yeah.
Second of all, we don't take responsibility for our families. There are far too many households that are headed by the woman because the man has just absconded. They can't even, when they're brought to court, they can't even pay the maintenance that they owe their children and their wife, their ex-wife or whatever it might be. Mm. Men are just in dereliction of duty at every possible. And look at the president, who's the male role model to so many people in this country. This guy doesn't seem to be responsible for his own family and finances, let alone the country.
Gareth, he is registered to vote. So I'm talking about the other guy.
Well, let me just look at Gauteng here quickly, because I just looked at Gauteng, right? So we've got 6.2 million people in Gauteng registered to vote. That is tiny.
That is tiny.
I mean,
that
there must be 15, 20 million people in this province.
Yeah, Gauteng is much. Yeah, it's much bigger. That number. You know, I think we need to look at these numbers. I'm worried about.
I mean, the Free State. You could swing it in the Free State. There are only 1.47 million people registered to vote, out of the total population of the Free State. Yeah. And I mean, we know the Free State and the Northern Cape, very low population numbers. The Northern Cape, 621,000 people will decide who the Premier of the Northern Cape is and which municipalities are run by whom. 621,000.
Yeah, the number that's important there, and it's the one that is the most important number in that thing, is the one that doesn't appear there. And that number is who is eligible to vote. That means that who has an ID,
right,
who is over 18 and has the right to vote. So we've got 26.3 million people registered. But there's another 10 million who have not registered. Those people have a chance to actually go and make a difference. And they didn't even... They haven't even bothered to go and essentially open the window for themselves to be there on the day. So that we all need to ask ourselves, what's going on? Why do they choose not to be part of this system?
I mentioned that 6 point something million people are registered in Gauteng to vote, right? Do you know how many in KwaZulu-Natal, the most populous province in South Africa, guess how many people are registered to vote?
3 million?
5.4.
5.4.
It's still less than Gauteng. This is the most populous and one of the most important provinces in the country, especially for the ANC.
Yeah, it will be I think there's another election that we're missing out on, and it's a big one, and that's KwaZulu-Natal. I think you're seeing more and more independent candidates there, and it will be interesting what ordinary voters go for, whether they say, in my community, my leader, Gareth Cliff, who actually was in the ANC for years and is now saying, you know what, I can do better for you on my own, whether they follow that leader or they stay with the party. And I find that interesting because many of those voters are not people who were ANC voters in 1994 or 2009. They were IFP voters. So they know what it's like to move from one party to another. And will they do it again in this election? I think that dynamic is one. There's so many dynamics in this election. But I think it's worth looking closer, a little bit more closely at those numbers.
Thank you, Justice. Always good to see you. We will do an election special next Thursday.
Yeah. Right, absolutely.
Excellent. The Burning Platform with Justice Malana, brought to you by Nando's every week, cliffcentral.com.
This is cliffcentral.com.